All right, we're going back east. We're bringing one of the talented sports writers and consultants in the game, and I always love talking to him around the holiday season, and that's Paul White. Paul, how are you today?
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Marty, how are you?
Well, we're doing fine. We're doing better than Strasburg is today, and I'm you know, I said to Pat, if there's one team that seems to have his number, it's Atlanta. I can't tell you why. But they knock them around, and I'm rooting for a race in the East. I tell you, I'm watching the box scores every day, saying, I hope Atlanta can hang into this thing and sort of make it interesting.
You know, the Braves are kind of interesting. They're one of those young teams, you know, you always look for that team that you think, can they get better as the year goes on? And I think the Braves kind of fit that. You know, and I certainly think they're also a team that could climb into the wild card race. You know, as Colorado comes back to the pack a little bit, I think the Braves are seeing a little hope. You know, I don't think they quite match up with the Nats, but the Nationals have their issues. The bullpen is the clear one. The starting pitching has generally been good, but you know, in that game today, they went to Tanner Roark in relief because they're trying to work out his problems. You know, so I think they feel a little vulnerable right now, and it's kind of crucial for the Braves to have a good series this weekend to kind of tell themselves, you know, maybe we do belong here.
Hey, Paul, you know, I've been hearing a lot about the Nationals. I'm very intrigued. I enjoy watching them, Bryce Harper, et cetera, Trey Turner. But I've been hearing them talk about 46 games in 48 days a lot. Now, obviously, there's the All-Star break. But that seems a little bit harsh, 46 and 48. Is that unique just to the Nationals, or are other teams going through stretches of games and days like that?
Well, makeup games are what create that. It's mandated that at least once every 21 days you've got to have an off day. But if you've got to make up a game from a previous series, you have to take up an off day. The players usually vote on that because it technically violates the collective bargaining agreement. But if the teams agree, that's the way to do it rather than force in a doubleheader, for instance. They go ahead and do that. And one of the things the Nationals had was a rainout in their interleague series with Baltimore. They figured that's a real easy one to knock off on an off day, which they did about a week and a half or so ago. But that did kind of create this problem.
Paul, you know, I always say that if you look at U.S. history through the eyes of baseball, you can see things that happen, and this technology that we have today in the world sort of crept in this week in Washington, or in Atlanta, I guess. It was Washington.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where the module said, well, rain is coming. and seriously, for 3 hours, the rain never got there. And then they started the game like at 11:30, ended it like at 1:30 in the morning. And FP Jr.'s here, and he looked it up. The Nationals were giving fans free concessions, soda, water, ice cream, and hot dogs.
They were just giving away. They told everybody to move down front and sit. I thought the best exchange was Ender Inciarte from the Braves. Somebody apparently tweeted and said, hey, why don't you go use the tarp for a slip and slide? You know, as we've seen players do, and Inciarte texted or tweeted back, but it's not wet. And it was Bryce Harper, of all people, who jumped in and decided he liked that tweet. And, you know, so, yeah, the Nats were pretty embarrassed. You know, the radar, I saw some of the radar, and living in the area, they were pretty much surrounded by rain. And it was like, it's moving, if it's moving west to east, it's going to hit us. Well, I live west of the ballpark, and that sells. Pretty much sat over my house for about a day and a half. So the Nats were fooled by a cell of thunderstorms that refused to move.
Well, but here's the point, though. The world we live in today, I don't remember games prior to the game being delayed 3 hours.
Especially
a night game, and then playing a night game. Because, as Pat said, what about your customers? What do you say to your customers? By the way, sit around until 11:30. Come on, it's during the week. You got to go to work and school.
And here's the other piece of that. The Metro, which is the Washington area's version of BART, closes at midnight.
Wow.
So if you took the subway to the game, you're out of luck. The way that's set up, if the Nationals have to pay the transit service that they want the trains to run beyond the normal time. And the Nats' policy in the past has been, we'll do that in the playoffs because we know games are going to run late. We have an 8 or 8:30 start. We're going to go ahead and do that. But they won't do it during the season because you can't muster up the people to work if you decide at 7 o'clock that night, oh, we're going to need to train. So they're kind of stuck in there, and they know they've got to. They would have been better off just postponing that game.
The Chicago Cubs head to the All-Star game. Unfortunately, the players aren't going from the Cubs other than Wade Davis, which is incredible to me. And I'm not sure I've seen stat. I'm sure Elias has got some stat on it. But for a world champion to send one player and begrudgingly their closer, and then, of course, the manager, everybody else, the trainer, the strength guy, the cook, everyone else is going. And I think it's just a testament to the trouble the Cubs are having.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of pieces to this. And, you know, we were just talking a few minutes ago how, you know, as the Atlanta Braves kind of decide, oh, maybe we belong. Well, we've seen that in both Central Divisions this year because the Indians and to a greater extent the Cubs haven't played well, haven't lived up to the expectations. And you've got upstart teams that were sitting there thinking, wow, we can do this. You know, Milwaukee now is starting to believe that they've got a shot. They can win this division. You know, they're in a better situation. You know, you take teams like the Diamondbacks and the Rockies, and they've had great seasons, but it's still like, oh, here come the Dodgers. Well, for the Brewers, everybody keeps waiting for here come the Cubs. It's not happening, and the Cubs have got their hands full now.
Yeah, big time. Paul Wojtuns, Marty, and Patrick, we're out here on the Public House patio. You mentioned the Dodgers, and Marty, in our last segment, we're talking about them, 59-29. Buster Olney said this may be the best Dodger team of all time. What does Paul White say?
It's certainly the best group of this current era. We've waited for several years. You know, you keep thinking, you know, every year when you look at the division, you've always, all right, size up the Dodgers, size up the Giants, where do we stand? And, you know, they fooled me enough years. There have been years I thought they have enough talent here to overcome their problems. It was a bad clubhouse for a while. There were all kinds of issues. And the feeling was, okay, they have so much talent, it doesn't matter anyway. And the Giants would prove that wrong. No, if you got a team that's a little more together in the clubhouse, they can make things happen. But this Dodger team seems to be a little bit more together. It's certainly deeper than any team we've seen. You know, they've really done a nice job. They've taken the Tampa Bay sort of a blueprint with Andrew Friedman and applied it to a team with a lot of money. You know, you bring in a Chris Taylor and he becomes a key guy. You know, he may be the next Justin Turner in that franchise. You know, you piece all these guys together, you know, the Chase Utleys and the rest, and all of a sudden you've got this team with incredible depth, and they can do anything they need to do. They can match lineups. Yasiel Puig is bought into, well, I guess I don't play every day, but I watched him hit a couple balls last night that he would have flailed at a year ago. Somebody's gotten to him and has him actually working on the right approach at the plate. It's taken him a while, but they've put together a good atmosphere there, and it's starting to pay off.
You think we'll see a lot of trading as we get close to July 31st? I mean, you look at the Red Sox maybe needing a third baseman. They talk about Frazier,
yep.
Prado, talking about those two.
Yeah, Josh Donaldson's name's out there. The Cardinals looking.
You got the Yankees looking maybe for a first baseman. Lucas Duda talking about him. Maybe Matt Adams. What do you think is going to happen here? Let's put it this way. The most likely things.
Well, I think probably the most likely one is everybody thinks the Nationals have to get a closer. David Robertson was the name that's popped up the most often, but the White Sox know how desperate the Nationals are, and apparently the price right now is ridiculous in terms of young players. You mentioned several of the key ones. I think St. Louis needs to do something to jolt that team. They've been an underachieving team, and the front office has become very frustrated with the way that team has played. So I think you're going to see the Cardinals try to make a big move, something that's kind of shock everybody. And they've got farm system to do it. I think the thing that really interests me. What about teams like, say, the Brewers, teams like the Twins? They're in it. They have a shot. But if they make that sort of traditional contenders move, you know, are you mortgaging the future that you're, you know, just because you're a little bit early to the party here? It's going to be interesting to see if those teams are willing to make those kind of moves.
You know, Paul, the Brewers have done it twice, getting frontline aces to head up their rotation with CC and Greinke, and it worked for them a couple times, or it at least propelled them into the playoffs. So who knows if that historical...
Yeah, and they're one of those teams that doesn't have an ace right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing close, really. They got some solid guys, but there's nothing close to an ace there.
Boy, you hear all the names. Chris Archer. Hey, Tampa Bay can win.
Everybody assumes Tampa Bay is going to trade guys. I mean, you might see them do things they've done in the past where, yeah, you trade a guy that's established, but you're getting guys back that will help you right now. They may trade up in terms of control years, but they're in it. They've got a real shot, and they've got great pitching. They've had a great game out of Alex Cobb today, which is huge for them. Archer's good. Odorizzi's good. They got two or three more really good young pitchers. They got a kid named Brent Honeywell that could be up at any point, and this guy will be the where do you see this guy with the return of the screwball, which we haven't seen for years? He's got an incredible one.
Paul White with us, formerly of USA Today and MLB.com, and really knows the game. It's great to have you on. Paul, what's your feel? Of course, we're a little closer to it here, but maybe we get too close sometimes. What's your feel about Cueto, Nunez, and what the Giants may do?
I think you got to move some of those guys at this point. You know, you've got to sell. I was going to say sell high. Sell as high as it's going to be. It's not going to get any better for moving those guys. You keep looking and you say, gee, you know, the Rockies are coming back to the pack. It's not impossible. I agree with that. But again, you got to make that kind of a trade, just what I was talking about with Tampa Bay. You're not gutting the team. You're not selling out. You're not giving up. Even if you're not going to make it this year, be in a position to keep winning next year, but you've got to trade those guys for major league ready guys who are more controllable for several more years.
Yeah, I even was suggesting to Marty, and I know this may sound crazy because Giants and Dodgers don't have a lot of relations, but Pence going down south to kind of balance out that lineup. Giants would get out from underneath next year's $18.5 million contract, and the Dodgers could clearly afford it. So that thought had entered my mind. Paul, I want to ask you if the All-Star game being just a pure exhibition next week, moves you at all, if it inspires you, or if it's back to being worth basically nothing.
You know what's funny? I'm more interested now that I'm not working full-time. When I had to go there every year, I got tired of it. The All-Star game is something, it's really cool because it comes to your town once theoretically every 30 years. So that's really cool. If you're like people in the media who go all the time, it's like, yeah, I've seen this, same old. So I'm actually kind of interested this year. Do I think it's the great spectacle? No, not really. Do I like the idea that it determines home field advantage in a World Series? No, I think that's ridiculous. But I'll watch. It'll be kind of fun. But it's not something that I stop my life for, and I can't wait for it to happen in midseason.
Baseball loves it with all the new young players. They love it. FP Jr.'s here. He may play next year. He's now a broadcaster at Santa Barbara. But honestly, they love the young players getting in there.
Yeah.
But, Paul, I'll ask you this. Pat, you're right. It is an exhibition now.
Mm-hmm.
What about, and Tony Maserati said this, it's not my idea. He said on MLB on High Heat this week when he was filling in for Mad Dog.
Mm-hmm.
He said they ought to implement all the rules we're talking about. The pitch clock, extra innings, you put the runners on base. You can freely substitute if you want. Just make the game a complete exhibition of all the rules we've talked about. What do you think about that?
To a point, yeah. There are some of those things that I think are a farce. And the extra inning rules, although in the All-Star game at least it would save us the Bud Selig embarrassment that led to this nonsense about this game counts now anyway. I'd love to see him try some of those other things. Play around with it. Let's see what fans think. Why not? It is an exhibition. Problem is, if you know, once you do that, you admit it's an exhibition, and you can't say it counts.
Yeah, and why not? Who cares?
Yeah.
It's not I agree. I agree.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah.
I'd love to see make every rule you want.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Well, let me ask you about the Derby, because I'm kind of leaning more towards the Derby this year with Aaron Judge getting in the mix and Giancarlo Stanton looking to defend his title down on his home field. I'm kind of into that with the home run Derby. What do you think? Who's the favorite? You going Judge, you going Stanton, or you going one of the other guys?
It's probably Judge. Now that we have all these wonderful things like launch angle and the rest, you're looking for the guy who just jacks them up in the air and they go, you know, a long way. Remember, this is a big ballpark to try and hit it out of. And Stanton, at least, is comfortable there. He's played there and he kind of knows it. So that gives him a bit of an edge. But you look at the home runs the Judge hits. I mean, he could just stand there, and with his size, you know, he's a batting practice beast who has turned into a legitimate big-time stud in-game. And he's just going to sit there and take his batting practice swing, and he might never stop hitting him.
He broke Joe DiMaggio's rookie record. DiMaggio did it in 1936 of 29 home runs. He did it over a whole season. This guy broke the record in 82 games. Well, to answer the question as to who the favorite would be in the home run derby, let me know who's pitching first. You know, if the guy's father's pitching, then maybe I'll give him a chance. But you got to know who the pitcher is, because the key is putting the ball on the tee for these guys.
Yeah. Right, right.
So if the pitcher gets nervous, it's trouble.
Right, and if you've got a guy you're comfortable with, whether it's somebody that pitches BP on your club or whoever it is, I absolutely.
One final note for me, Paul, is that right now they're honoring Barry Bonds out on King Street here at AT&T Park, and they're putting his name and his plaque on the Wall of Fame. And to me, I was kicking it around earlier that Barry Bonds may be the single greatest source of content in sports talk radio for the Bay Area in the last 30 years. Obviously, sports talk radio is not an old medium. Print, you name it. So what do you think about Barry Bonds, and who perhaps were his peers during his generation? Is Ken Griffey and A-Rod the only ones that can even compare, or do you got another name you'd like to contribute?
By the way, Pete Rose would argue with that about the king of
content
radio subjects. Because that one, that still goes on, which
it does.
Amazing, you know. Anyway, I think Griffey and A-Rod were the closest peers because they could do all of those things also. A-Rod, obviously, as a shortstop first, a premium position. Griffey gets a little edge in center over left with Bonds, although, you know, Bonds could have played center for certainly the first half of his career, but they had mostly in Pittsburgh, Andy Van Slyke, especially a great center fielder. You know, it's tough. I mean, it's clear the guy was the best player in baseball twice. He was the best player before all the nonsense, and then under the sort of new rules, lack of rules that he played under with mostly with the Giants, he was the best player under those rules too. I still have a problem. You know, my issue has always been, okay, we had sort of lawlessness in baseball, but there were no rules. There was no testing, and everybody was doing it. Okay, I get that. I have to accept that. But after the testing went in, there was a small group that thumbed their nose at the game, and that still bothers me.
Yeah, very well put. Very well put. The best before and the best after. I like
no
that.
No doubt.
Very good. Hey, Paul, great having you on as always. And we'll catch up with you as we get near the deadline and see what you got on your mind.
Thanks, Paul.
Right. Sounds good, guys.
Very good. Paul White, always a pleasure.
I enjoyed that.